With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by AlexRossArt.com. Alex has a brand new graphic novel coming out from Marvel and Abrams Books, Fantastic Four, Full Circle. It comes out September 6th. It's a rainy night in Manhattan, and not a creature is stirring except for the Thing, Ben Grimm. When an intruder suddenly appears inside the Baxter Building, the Fantastic Four find themselves surrounded by a swarm of invading parasites. These carrion creatures, composed of negative energy, come to Earth using a human host as a delivery system. But for what purpose? And who is behind this untimely invasion? The Fantastic Four have no choice but to journey to the Negative Zone, an alien universe comprised entirely of antimatter, risking not just their own lives, but the fate of the cosmos. Fantastic Four Full Circle is the first long-form work written and illustrated by acclaimed artist Alex Ross, who revisits a classic Lee Kirby story from the 60s and introduces the storyline for a new generation of readers. Bold, vivid colors, his trademark visual storytelling, Ross takes Marvel's first team of superheroes to places only he can illustrate. The book also features a special poster jacket with the front flap unfolding to reveal an all-new fully painted origin story of the Fantastic Four. Again, Fantastic Four Full Circle, out September 6th. For more details, go to alexrossart.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Time again for Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. John Suntress here. It's an all-ages day on Word Balloon. Earlier, we had Brad Meltzer on talking about his I Am Batman and I Am Superman books. And now it's time to talk about Deadman and a brand new anthology of spooky tales from our good friend Franco and Company. Good to see you, buddy.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure, man.
We don't get to talk often, so I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. I know. We never talk. That's true. Here's the wraparound cover. It's the advanced uncorrected script. Lots of spelling errors in the uncorrected script. That's not true. Dead Man Tells the Spooky Tales. That is the title. And you've got a lineup of great creative people here. And, you know, starting off with Sarah Richard and our buddy Andy Price and our buddy Sarah, of course. But tell me about the artists.
DC was kind enough to let me pick some of my favorites. And they let me have free reign. And I can't believe that they let me go with these people. We have Agnes Garbowska, Isaac Goodhart, Derek Charm, Scoot McMahon, did a story, Scott, Tressa Bowling, Justin Castaneda, Thomas Boatwright. I know I'm forgetting other people, Mike Hartigan, Abigail Larson, Andy Price did an amazing story. And Morgan Bean. That's one of Andy's pieces. And it's just, his artwork is amazing. We were supposed to do a story years ago with Katie Cook, and I were supposed to write a Sabrina story, and Andy was supposed to do the artwork. So I was really, really bummed when that fell through. So he was one of the first people I thought of when they asked me who I wanted to work with on this book. So besides Sarah doing the actual Dead Man pieces, Andy was my next choice to do one of the stories.
Understood. And man, I'll tell you, I love Sarah's design. Here's the cover again, but I'm going to pull up another image and stuff. You do a really nice tribute to Neil Adams right away in the inside cover.
Oh, thank you.
And yeah, man, and I'm really glad you did, because, you know, of course, Neil was so important. I guess actually Carmine Infantino drew him first.
Yeah.
But very early on in the run, Neil took over.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, yeah, that's the dead man we all know and love. You know, I mean, good Lord.
Right. That's the one. Yeah. That's the one that I came to know. And I got a bunch of issues somewhere squirreled away here, but I couldn't find them. But yeah, he's the one who made an impact with me for Dead Man. Him and the two names I think of are him and Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. I love his artwork and I love his Dead Man. And those are the two iconic artists in my mind. And we were finishing up production on the book when Neil passed away. And I had the good fortune of meeting him, talking to him a few times. And he came to sign at Audio Comics in New York as well. And he was just really funny. They asked if I wanted to do a tribute. And I said, yes, absolutely, I want to.
I don't blame you, man. And again, I've always appreciated, you know, both Jose and Neil. It's the classic design. But then you get the ambitious people like Kelly Jones. Here, I'm going to take the comment right down. I'm glad Wayne finished it. I agree with Wayne, by the way. It's a good read. He loves the use of Dead Man as the narrator, like, you know, your classic Cain and Abel, House of Secrets and House of Mystery right stuff and everything.
Yeah.
There's, but yeah, that's, I forgot Mike Baron wrote Love After Death. Wow. Mm-hmm. Crazy, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, another great iteration. And then let's get back to Sarah's one. I wanted to bring up another image, but here I'll bring back cover for in the meantime.
Sarah was my choice of artist for the book when I pitched it.
There we go.
Yeah, she's got just such a unique style that I really wanted it for the book. And when I pitched it, I told them that, you know, Sarah's my artist for Dead Man. You know, everything else we can discuss, but you know, Sarah's pretty non-negotiable. I want her on the book because I love her artwork so much, and I thought it was just so fitting to the character. She does some really amazing pieces in the book.
Agreed. And again, it's Boston's always been a great kind of, as much as he is part of, you know, DC's dark horror world, he's always had a sense of humor. And much like Cain and Abel, he's a great narrator for this series of stories, which I don't want to spoil, but for the most part are not like other DC horror characters. You got one in there, but, right, you know, and I loved it. It was great. I don't want to spoil. It's brand new. It's out now, everybody. So you should be picking it up at your store. And a perfect, great gift to give, you know, you got a friend who's got a kid or of course your own child and stuff. And it's like, here you go. Here's a Halloween gift and everything. No, it's perfect. Great timing.
There was some resistance from some people, but not my direct editor.
For Sarah?
I'm sorry?
For Sarah? Or well, the idea of Dead Man?
Yeah, the whole idea of a horror book. But, you know, when you talk about in the younger reader genre, you talk about scary stories to tell in the dark and things like that. You know, that's stuff that we grew up on and we read and scared the crap out of us and we loved it. And you know, they're like, well, you know, it might be too much for, and we're like, no, it's not. Younger readers love this stuff. They love horror. Look at R.L. Stine. Look at Goosebumps. Look at all this other stuff. You're going to tell me that, you know, and you don't have a book like this in your young adult line. And they're like, oh, we don't. And I'm like, yeah, that's why you need it. And Sarah's coming with me. And they're like, yeah, that's a no-brainer.
No, that's great. And no, you're right. And it's funny. I forget who I just heard recently say this. And it's true. When you go to a horror movie and you got kids, they scream. And then immediately they laugh because, wow, that was cool. You know, it's that kind of reflex. I mean, you do have the occasional, you know, panty waist that's, you know, going to be traumatized. God bless him. I have a nephew that unfortunately was in that category. The poor kid. He's grown out of it, thankfully. But yeah, no, it's, you know, and I'll be honest. Hey, man, you know, I was a little kid when The Exorcist came out, scared the shit out of me. Oof. And so many other. Remember, It's Alive, mm-hmm. where it was the bassinet and it was yep. Rockabye Baby. And then all of a sudden, it was the heartbeat, and you had the claw hanging out.
Yeah.
The bat. It's like
yeah. Or The Exorcist, The Omen.
Yes,
those were yeah. The Exorcist I couldn't get through, but The Omen was another one that was terrifying.
Oh,
and I probably was one of those panty waves because I didn't like those movies. It was, you know, it's funny that you mentioned the movie theater and kids getting scared and laughing, because one of the stories in the book, the one drawn by Isaac Goodhart, was directly because of that, was one of those. So it's about some kids going to a movie theater.
I'm going to grab the image and thank you for, you know, I'm sorry. I think the proof that you sent me didn't have all of the collaborators listed. So I don't think I got, Isaac and Scoot, and I want you to, here, let's see, as I'm putting this up, is this it? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Isaac's story. Yeah. So, and again, I don't want to, the images that I picked won't spoil any stories and stuff, but there you go. Oh yeah. Wayne points out, absolutely, The Shining was very spooky. Mm-hmm. It was what I love about The Shining. We can talk about, you know, movies while we talk about the book as well. That opening, where it's the like almost airplane shot of the countryside as they're driving to the manor and stuff. And it's that foreboding music. And it's like, if you just put some of the more pastoral music you could think of, it's the same shot. But what made it kind of dread and everything was the music. And this is something that Snyder and I were talking about last night, that doing scary stuff in comics is harder than movies or TV, because you've got the other tools of quick camera cuts and even panning shots and, of course, music and other accents like that. And all you got in comics is, you know, the static image.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wish we had a soundtrack to go along with the stories in the book, because but it is a little bit more difficult to get something scary. We try not to go for gore. We went more for scary and fun, and there's some fun stories in there, but there's some stories that are just hopefully just knock your socks off when you come to them. So
who did this?
Chris Amiga.
Oh, great.
Yeah, he had, you know, I approached him and he was really hesitant about doing it at first, because he doesn't do a lot of comic panel to panel stuff. And I said, oh, actually, you know, that works in my favor, because my scripts are not traditional scripts. They're storyboard scripts. And when Brian Michael Bendis told me once, he goes, you know, you don't want to do that, because then the artist thinks that you're doing their job. And I'm like, well, yeah, but it's easier for me, because I'm an artist and I'm a writer. So it's easier for me to storyboard a script out rather than just write the script out, because I know the pacing that I want. But I always tell the artist, change it. You know, if you can do this in three panels instead of, you know, the six that I have, or if you can do it in a splash page, as long as the sentiment is there, what I want on the page is there, you have free reign to, you know, you're the director. I'm the writer and the storyboard artist, but you're the director go for it and give me what you got. Sarah is a case in point, because she likes to paint like a full page. We did that with The Ghost and the Owl, where it's a full page that she can play with. So what I do is I try to work with that. You know, I try and put the dialogue where it could flow across the page on the script for her. And it works out. We've had a good couple of books that we've been able to produce that way. Hopefully more at some point.
Yeah, honestly, I really, again, and also I think the choices that you made as far as these artists are terrific and really cool stories. So who did this one?
This is Derek Charn. Yeah. And he just had like a really great cartoony quality that I liked, discuss. He was one that was suggested by my editors at DC. It was Michelle Wells at the beginning, and then Courtney Jordan, who was just amazing, and then Jim Chadwick, because Michelle wound up leaving halfway through the project, leaving DC, not the project. She wanted to stay with the project, or at least that's what she told me, but I believe her. Courtney Jordan, you know, followed all the way through, and Jim, you know, kind of looked over her shoulder. So this was one of the artists that was suggested to me, and I've never met Derek, but I love his artwork, and I thought he was a perfect fit for the story.
I didn't realize that the cat image that I put, and I'm sorry, Scoot, I didn't pay attention to credits. So this is Scoot's story? Or no, is this Scoot's story?
No, that's Chris Omega. Scoot did the scientist who was panicking. He did the – yeah, I don't want to give it away because if I tell you're giving away the story.
Hold on. All right, I'm going to – we'll go through these in a – all right, let's – well, we may as well go through image by image as I've got it. Here's another – again, I don't know who drew this, but it's outstanding, and I love kind of the animation style to their art.
Yeah, this is a Abigail Larson, and she's just an amazing artist. Again, I've never met Abigail. I'd like to, but you know, that's the thing with some of these artists. I've met most of them, but people like Derek and Abigail and Morgan Beam is the other one that I haven't met. But I was really kind of, you know, scared to give them a script because I don't do it traditionally, but they were okay with it. They were fine with it. And I love what she turned out. I want to say it's my favorite story, but I like all the stories in the book. So,
well, yeah. And honestly, man, I think I've got everybody covered, and I'm just going to go through and grab the random images that I picked. And you tell me who we're looking at.
Yeah, this is Morgan Beam. And you know, she, again, I had just seen her artwork from what they showed me, in the, you know, some samples and stuff like that they had showed me. And this is, I loved it. So, I'd love her to do a story.
I love that it's an autumn story as well. I mean, obviously Halloween is autumn and everything, but it really is like kind of perfect timing for this moment, you know, this. And again, of course, it's Halloween time, you know, leaves are changing and everything, so that's cool. So here, and I like this. I'm always happy to see a glowing skull.
This is Justin Castaneda, and he's a great, you know, cartoony artist, and I love his stuff. And honestly, I asked Justin to draw this story and ask him, because we did it before. This was like part of the pitch of the book, so I didn't tell him what it was for. So I asked him if he would draw it. I asked him if he would mind doing it without getting paid, with the chance of getting paid, if we published it. And he was kind enough to do it. He's a super, super nice guy. But this story was done before. This was the first story done in the book and before any of the other ones, because it was part of the pitch package when I sent it, and it went in unchanged. There were hardly, I think we changed the name of somebody or something like that, but nothing was changed in the story whatsoever.
Okay. Hold on one second. I keep grabbing other images, and really everybody, I mean, you can tell from this art how great the book is. Let's see. How about now? Boom. I love this story. This is really fun.
Yeah. This is Tressa Bowling. And she's just, again, another amazing artist that, you know, you find in Artist Alley when you go to C2E2. I commissioned a Batgirl from her, a stunning, you know, Batman 66 Batgirl from her that's hanging up on the wall over there. And then I pitched a couple of different projects with her in mind, but nothing ever just came about. But then I asked her if she'd be interested in doing this, and she said yes. Luckily, everybody said yes first go around, so I really lucked out.
And you know, a couple good questions coming up, but I really do. I love. I mean, this is kind of your classic, like what starts off very innocently, but you might be in a grocery store and you see somebody like this, and you wonder what their backstory is, and of course, very very fun. Yes. Yeah. Word Balloon is brought to you by my listeners, the League of Word Balloon listeners, via Patreon, patreon.com/wordballoon. You know, Word Balloon is like an audio magazine when you come right down to it in terms of the types of interviews that I do. I hope you enjoy it. I hope it enriches your love of comic books and pop culture in general with the various subjects I hit and the guests that I have. Is Word Balloon worth a dollar a month to you? Is it worth the price of a comic book a month to you? If you think it is, I would love your support. Patreon.com/WordBalloon. Word Balloon is free. It'll always be free. But there are costs, and, you know, hey, you're helping me out. So if you would, I would really appreciate the support.
patreon.com/wordballoon. Thank you, as always, the League of Word Balloon listeners.
Honestly, man, no, I really appreciate your imagination in these stories as well and the different directions you went in. And it's great. There's some homages to kind of classic tropes as well. But I really, you know, in fact, the next story, in fact, reminds me of a fun Twilight Zone.
This is an amazing artist. His name is Thomas Boatwright. And I just, I have a couple other projects that I'm hoping to get off the ground with him. He's just such a talented, versatile artist. And I asked him if he would be interested in doing this. And I love this story so much. I think he brings just the right sort of creepiness to this story. And it's just great. I can't say enough good things about all the artists I was fortunate enough to work with.
Well, again, that's why I want to showcase it here on the video. And, you know, I hope people that are listening to the audio will take a moment and check it out. There we go.
Well, that's Scoot's story.
Okay, that's awesome, man. Again, I don't want to give away the surprise in the story, but that's terrific, man. And way to go, Scoot. I really enjoyed that. That's nice.
Yeah.
And I'm not just saying this because you know you got to go or you're always on the Aya podcast and everything because I rip you all the time when I don't like something that you're doing. So, and then how about this story? Oh, this is the Isaac story.
Isaac Goodhart did this story. Yep. Yeah.
Absolutely. Francis, truly, well done. I love it. I think it's I like it a lot. Yeah. I like the part where Dead Man's there. Question from King Sport Cal wants to know why Dead Man instead of did DC even say, well, instead of Dead Man, why don't you do Cain and Abel? You know, the House of Secrets, House of Mystery.
No, I've always been a really big fan of Dead Man, like we were talking about before with the Neil Adams stuff. And you know, look, I'm not just, you know, blowing smoke. I have
standby
appearance of Dead Man.
Yes, that I believe that's your Carmine Infantino Dead Man on the cover.
So I have the first appearance. And then I didn't pull out any Neil Adams stuff, but, you know, this is the Jose Luis Garcia Lopez.
Yes.
So, I'm a fan. And, you know, when I thought of the idea for a horror-centered book, I pitched it to them with Dead Man in mind and told them what I wanted to do. Actually, when I talked to Michelle, I met with her. It was over drinks, and I pitched two projects. I had pitched her three or four different projects at different times prior to this. And all of them kind of went by the wayside. They sounded good, but, you know, for one reason or another, they just passed on them. And I went to this meeting with, excuse me, two projects. And I'm thinking, you know, the last few times I hit her with a pitch, they eventually got nowhere or went nowhere. And I said, you know, this time I'm going to have a backup and I'm going to have two pitches with me. And the first one, surefire one, I thought was Dead Man. But then you never know when you go into these things. So I figured Dead Man was my best choice. And then she said, well, what else you have? And I'm like, oh, damn. Like, that's, you know, there goes Dead Man. He's dead in the water, right? So I pitched my other idea. And at the end of the meeting, she's like, great. I love him. Let's do both of them. So Dead Man was done. And the other book is finished, but hasn't been announced yet. So it'll be out, I think, in 2024, hopefully. But yeah, I, you know, stroke of good luck that, you know, I came with a backup and then she picked both of them. So
that's great. Do you see, would you like to do more of these?
I would love to do more Dead Man. I kind of floated
in this format. You know what I mean? Like, as far as, you know, having him narrate, or I'd love to see you do a straight up, you know, Boston Brand story.
I would love to. I would love to do either one of those. Actually, the two ideas I floated them are different, and one of them has him more involved, Boston Brand more involved. So we'll see. But again, it depends on how well the book does. You know, how, you know, everything's bottom dollar. So
sure, of course.
Yeah. You
know. No, I get it. I want to. What else was I going to say about Dead Man? You know, I really, as you said, I mean, both those runs are great. And of course, the Mike Baron Kelly Jones story as well. And again, I think that Dead Man is such a versatile character that you really can do anything with him. I always love the Batman Neil Dead Man stories, and even Neil's weird Batman Odyssey that had, you know, them going in, you know, into the center of the earth and meeting the weird people and stuff.
Yeah.
Dead Man was great in that story, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he's just, you can do just really anything with the character. He's just that versatile. So to plug him in as narrator for the book was an easy thing to do. But he can definitely be part of the stories, involved with the stories, and you know, really play off that well that way as well, instead of just being the narrator, I feel.
I hear you. Absolutely. Are there other DC horror characters you'd like to play with? And I don't know if you want to name them or not.
Oh, I would. But yeah, I'm not going to give anything away just in case I go somewhere with them.
I respect that. It's all good. All right, I'm bringing up because also a recent release, and as we talk about it, I'll bring up the image, but you have a story, the Saved by the Bell Reeve. So, you know, yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, that's Artie Balthazar and myself worked on that. He drew it and we wrote it together, but we got a call that they were putting this book together and asked if we'd be interested in doing a Tiny Titans Meet Suicide Squad story. And we're like, yeah, be down for that. So it's a little bit more of an adult story instead of a Tiny Titans-ish story because the Suicide Squad is involved. But we still, you know, we still bring the kid humor to it rather than being all dark and nasty, you know?
I can only imagine the kids walking around Belle Reve and the prison and area. That's perfect. Put like kind of like that Simpsons where Bart and Ralph wind up in the Springfield prison and they walk by the electric chair and Ralph says, smells like hot dogs.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff. Whenever Art and I get together and write stories, there's a lot of stuff that winds up on the cutting room floor. You know, but you know, it's fun to do. It's fun to write with him. But you know, Dead Man was something that I can really kind of stretch my wings on and do on my own. Which was also fun to do.
No, man. Hey, long time coming, Francis. I mean, again, we love Artie, and Artie. You know, hey, for years, I'm sure you thought your first name was And Franco.
Right.
You know, I mean,
well, that's how I would always introduce myself. You know, I'd say, hi, I'm Ann Franco.
Yeah. Truly, I was telling you off the air, and no lie, Scott Snyder, Brad Meltzer are like, oh, yeah, that's cool. Yeah. I heard about his Dead Man book. That's great.
Oh, that's cool.
So, you know, we're all rooting for you, Francis, and we're happy that DC, you know, gave you this opportunity to, you know, be front and center. And again, we love when you collaborate with Artie, but, you know, this is like I wouldn't say Simon and Garfunkel because I don't think that art's albums were as strong as Paul's. I'm trying to think. Well, Lennon and McCartney, man.
That's a good analogy. Seeing as how I just saw Ringo the other day in concert, that's a good analogy.
Francis, honestly, I meant to ask you about that when we were doing our Aya Trek watch. This is a good opportunity. So, who did Ringo have with him in his all-star band?
Oh, geez, he had Edgar Winter. And he had Colin Hayes from Men at Work.
Yes, wow.
He had lead guitarist from Toto. His name escapes me.
Jeff Porcaro?
I want to say.
Or was it the drummer or the singer?
It was a guitarist and singer.
Oh, okay. I think Jeff Porcaro is the Toto guy.
Yeah, possible. But
Certainly one of them.
Yeah.
But that's cool.
The opportunity came about, and I'm like, ooh, I missed my other chance years ago because I was at the DC offices one year, and they were doing something on the street, you know, because their offices used to face the Ed Sullivan Theater where David Letterman used to do the show.
Yeah, Colbert does it there.
There was a whole bunch of, you know, construction and car, and they had blocked off the street, and I'm thinking, man, this is going to be hell to get out of here, so I better leave now. You know, before whatever they're doing down there just gets all chaosed up. And so I left and I get home. And when I get home, because I only live about an hour from the city, I turn on the news and hey, Paul McCartney did a live rooftop concert and I missed it by like that much. And I was like, doofus, idiot, you know? I could have just stayed like another half an hour and seen the concert, you know? And I'm like, ah, So I'm kicking myself for that. So when the opportunity for Ringo came up, I'm like, I'm taking it. So I'm going to go see Ringo.
You know, yeah. I mean, they're not getting any younger, and thank God they are still out there touring and everything.
Dude, I think the guy's like 82 years old and he's doing jumping jacks up on stage. And it was cold out because it was an amphitheater. So it was cold out. And last time he was out there, I'm just like, oh, I hope he doesn't catch his death of cold out there.
Yeah, really. God forbid. Yeah, really? William Henry Harrison. Exactly. Yeah, we don't want that to happen, Ringo. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. No, you know, he's a vegan and he really takes care of himself, and that's wonderful. And the guy, again, for 82, like you said, so much energy, so much fun. And you know, God, I listened to one Beatle podcast. It's called Nothing Is Real, and it's these two Irish guys. And they're like, oh, you know, I don't know if you heard Ringo's latest. Like, he released, like, an EP, like, only maybe five or six songs. And I heard it. It's, like, sounded good. I mean, it's, you know, certainly not, you know, the Fab Four. And through the years – hey, Ringo's first album, and what I love about that album that had Photograph and Only You and really a lot of it, you know, It Don't Come Easy, all three of the others really were still helping him. And it's like, yeah, let's do what we can to make Ringo's solo album great and everything. And it is. It's amazing.
Yeah. No.
So did he sing, you know, did he sing Rack My Brain?
No,
he didn't. That was a terrible 80s song of his, if people don't remember.
He did Boogaloo, Get Back Boogaloo.
Off Boogaloo, sure. Yeah. Hilarious.
And then
did he do Only You, the Platters song?
No, he did.
I love both Ringo's version of that, but then also on one of the last Lennon box sets, Lennon sent him a demo of him doing Only You. And it's essentially Ringo basically, you know, repeated John's version. And, right. It's a little more upbeat than the Only You from the Platters and everything. So, all right, there you go. Wayne says he'd like to see the witches from the Witching Hour maybe make a cameo in the next volume.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah.
Sure. So I, trying to think, did you read Tales from the Unexpected? Or I liked Marvel's monster stuff, Where Monsters Dwell, which was a bunch of reprints of Atlas monster stories before the Marvel Universe really took off.
Yeah, I never read any of the monster stuff. I became more of a horror fan through movies than comics. When I read comics, it was mostly superhero stuff. And then only later did I get into some of the newer horror stuff that they did, in comics. But yeah, all that other stuff, like, you know, House of Mystery and all that other stuff, I never really read any of that stuff when I was a kid. So my initiation was, you know, The Exorcist and Halloween and stuff like that, where really cut your teeth on that stuff.
See, and that stuff, like I said, I'll be honest, it scared the hell out of me. Hell, when they re-released The Exorcist and they put in the new scenes and you see Linda Blair crab walk down the stairs.
Yeah.
And all it is her doing like a crab walk, like we used to do in gym class. That freaked me out. I'm like, I don't need to see this.
She goes up the wall. That kind of like, you know, freaked me out too. And then the head spinning all the way around too.
Yeah. It's funny. We were talking about Phil Hester and I were talking about radio actors and the woman that played the voice of the devil, or the demon that possesses Linda Blair, was this great radio actress, Mercedes McCambridge, who also made on-camera appearances in movies and television as well. Great, great old Hollywood actress and stuff. And, you know, she was a senior citizen when she was doing The Exorcist and stuff, and was, you know, God, you know, really kind of the unsung hero of that movie.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah, Halloween was one that just, you know, terrified me because I saw it at a very impressionable age. You know, my parents let me go see it and let me go see it by myself. They wouldn't let us into the theater, but you know, my dad comes over, you know, cause he worked at the restaurant right next to the movie theater and he knew the movie theater guy and he's like, oh, I'll let the kids into it. He goes, oh yeah, go ahead. And you know, so it's all of these, you know, adults in the movie theater and me, you know, watching this horror film. And I'm trying not to wet my pants as I'm watching this thing, getting scared out of my gourd. But I survived. And I think some of those things made an impression on me with some of these stories, you know?
100%. No, I could see that. Wesley has a good observation. He says, I read the EC reprints as a kid. Some of the most effective sequential short stories I've ever read. Oh, absolutely. I mean, those are classics. Good Lord, yes.
Yeah.
Can you read any of the Tales from the Crypt stuff and things like that?
Yeah. Yeah. But again, later, not you sure. know, earlier on, but I did read some of the, yeah, the Tales from the Crypt stuff. Yeah.
For the, for this, as you, you know, we mentioned, you know, things like Goosebumps and some of the other kid horror stuff. Have you have you met R.L. Stine or some of the masters of this genre?
Yeah, I've met R.L. Stine a couple times, actually. But a couple years ago, I took my son, because he was a big Goosebumps fan. So I took my son to meet him, and it you know, my son comes to conventions. My wife comes with us, and sometimes like we'll meet a celebrity or something like that. And he's like, you know, he's nonplussed. You know, it doesn't bother him at all. We got to R.L. Stine, and he's like, you know, he's a little gaga over him, you know, and he goes, that's the Goosebumps guy. And I'm like, I know, go talk to him, you know? So he got his, book signed and stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, again, I like all sorts of stories. I mean, I love superhero stuff. I love, comedy, you know, with obviously with Tiny Titans and stuff like that. I love writing stuff like that. You know, I did superhero stuff like, you know, the Shazam or the Green Team or things like that, or Young Justice. When we did that stuff, I just love comics. I, you know, I just want to do that for the rest of my life if I can help it.
Well, and I'm glad you're getting these opportunities, and I want to talk to you about some of the other stuff you do, like your first reader books that you've made over the years. But mentioning the Shazam book, Billy Batson and the Power of Shazam, and Young Justice 2. Let's stick with those for a minute. I'm really excited about the Black Adam movie coming up in a couple of weeks. And we were talking the other night. Was it after our Trek watch that we were discussing it with Mitch and Wayne? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and it's like, hey man, and it's funny because Mitch didn't remember. Mike Kunkel, first there was
Jeff Smith.
Yes, Jeff Smith did the graphic novel
right. That
really had a great kind of young, you know, kid version of Shazam. And then Mike Kunkel was doing the Billy Batson and the Power of Shazam book for a while. And then you and Art took over and got mm-hmm. Mike Norton to draw it eventually. And mm-hmm. those are some of the best recent Captain Marvel stories. No disrespect to the new continuity and the things that have come from the new movies. But, man, you know, if you really wanted to read some great classic Marvel or Marvel Captain Marvel stuff, I think you guys delivered. And I'm going to bring up the cover, my favorite story in there. And that was when Freddie, Captain Marvel Jr., for a moment was seduced to the dark side and was a Black Adam acolyte.
Right. Well, yeah, they you know, the real fun part about that book was we had a couple of different artists, because what happened with Mike Kunkel on the book is they started it at the same time we started our Tiny Titans run. So those were supposed to be the two pillars of the young reader line for DC.
Sure.
And then when Mike couldn't continue on the book, they asked us if we wanted to take over. And I jumped at the chance. Art was like, well, you know, we got, you know, some of this other stuff. I'm like, no, let's do it. Let's do it. We can do it. And the really fun part was they left us alone. There was no editorial mandates or anything. You know, they're just like, you know, Dan DiDio at the time, you know, said, if you're taking this over, tell us what happens after, you know, Jeff and Mike told their stories. What happens next? What's the direct sequel to the Jeff Smith book? And we took it and we ran. And I had the idea of taking Freddie and having him be an acolyte of Black Adam first. And they're like, oh, that's never been done. I'm like, yeah, that's why I want to do it. So we turned him, you know, cause I'm like, well, how does Freddie become, you know, Captain Marvel Jr.? You know, Mary Marvel makes sense cause it's his sister, but you know, how does Freddie become Captain Marvel Jr. in our story anyway? Cause there's no real connection. He hadn't been set up at all in Jeff or Mike's run. So I'm like, how do we take him and how do we make him, Captain Marvel Jr.? And I thought, well, what if we made him a bad guy first? And then you know, he kind of sees the error of his ways and becomes, you know, Captain Marvel. So that was a unique way to get to it. And I just had a lot of fun with those stories. Those are some of my favorite stories to work on, especially when once Mike Norton came on, his artwork is just amazing.
100%, man. Yeah. No, I'm going to bring up a couple images of it. And truly, these were such great ideas, both story and art. And it really, it's so great. Was there ever a thought of art drawing it? Here's the cover, everybody. Look at that.
Yeah.
There you go. Right there. I mean, that's says it all right there. Boom.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite runs. No, because art was drawing Tiny Titans. So we were writing and he was drawing Tiny Titans. I just couldn't and still don't. Actually, the second project that I mentioned before that's coming out from DC in 2024, I drew a lot of the book. And it's the first time I committed to drawing any real part of any book because of my day job. I just can't afford the time because I'm, you know, as you know, I'm a high school art teacher by day and a cartoonist and writer by night. So I just couldn't afford the time devote to it. So when the pandemic came up, it was a unique opportunity for the second book that I pitched to actually draw. And it took me the better part of a couple of years to draw between my day job and my other writing gigs. But I'm really proud of that book. And when it comes out, I'm going to be back on to talk about it because you're going to have me on to talk about it.
100%, man. Absolutely. Look, here's another great – I'm sorry it's not as good of a picture, but there's another great Norton cover of Black Adam.
Yeah, just when you know, when he came on the book, man, it just really just, you know, started firing on all cylinders. Because the other artists that we had Steven DeStefano for one issue, and you know, I was talking to Dan. I'm like, can we have him on the book? And he goes, no. I said, why not? He goes, because he did me a favor for filling in for one issue, but you know, he's off to do other things. But I have this other artist, Byron Vaughns, I think his name was, who was a storyboard artist for the Tiny Toons, the Buster Bunny and those guys on TV. It was on Fox at the time, and it was great. But it just he was more cartoony. You know, and when they asked us who we wanted on the book, I immediately suggested Mike Norton because he had that cartoony quality, but a little bit more grounded in the superhero world, which I loved his artwork. And once he came on, it was just, you know, guns blazing. That was just such a fun book to do. We got to do so many fun stories. Mike actually came to me, he goes, we got to draw this stuff. For real? They're going to let us do this? And I'm like, yeah. So this is fun. And then later, you know, we went on to Young Justice, and he goes, they're going to let us do that too? And I'm like, yeah. So it was just so much fun with him. You know, and whenever I work with my artists, I like to ask them what they like to do. And Mike was just so funny. And I said, what do you like to draw? And he goes, I like to draw rubble. And I'm like, really? You just like, he goes, yeah, I like to draw rubble. So I'm like, all right. So every issue, like, you know, I'm like, all right, draw this, you know. So that's fun, you know. Like the same thing with Sarah. I'm like, what kind of things do you want to draw, you know? And getting back to the Dead Man book for a second, I'm like, what do you want to draw? That'd be cool if we do this. And she just took things in a whole new direction, which is why I love working with different artists. There's a sequence in the book where I wrote that Dead Man is holding a cat and kind of nuzzles it against his face. And I said, it'd be cool if you have the cat like swoosh his face and his face gets deformed. And she drew the cat going through his eye and out of his ear and his head's all messed up. And I'm like, oh my God, she just like killed it on this page. You know, it just takes it in that direction where it just like, I love what they did with it. You know?
That's fantastic, man.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm surprised, you know, a lot of times, and I should have mentioned this at the start, sometimes Franco's connection might get frozen. Yeah. And you know, exactly. So it's happened a few times on Trek Watch and some of our other shows.
I'm sorry.
But, thankfully, yeah, maybe I've just jinxed us mentioning it. But yeah. Well, and the other the thing I was trying to bring up was a couple covers of Young Justice, because again, great run. I was going to bring up that fantastic cover of Connell fighting Superman on the cover.
Yeah,
that's another great iconic moment. And everything from your guys' run, good stuff.
Yeah. It's a shame because Mike couldn't continue on the book, and then you know the creators of the TV show really wanted to do the book. And we're like, oh, okay. You know, those guys want to write the book. I guess it's okay. You know?
Fine.
So, yeah.
I love the cartoon. I'm really happy that it has had such a long life on both DC Universe and now HBO Max. Man, isn't it weird? I know you work for the company and I don't want to, you know, but it is weird. The things that are getting greenlit and the things that aren't. And that's why I was so happy. I'll stick to the positive that Pat Schumacher got another season. And now we're going to have a fourth season of Harley Quinn.
Yeah. I love Harley Quinn. I think that's just such a great show. Yeah. I mean, I work freelance for the company, so I don't work for the company. I work freelance, but some of the decisions are weird, but you know, I'm glad that they're doing Harley and I don't know what's going to happen with that. The new Batman series, the one that Bruce Timm was involved with, because I was really excited to see what was going to go there. But hopefully, maybe it'll land somewhere else.
What I'm hearing, and I hope to have Ed Brubaker, who is the head writer of the show, on to get that clarification or confirmation. But that certainly seems to be what was being said by DC in terms of, okay, it may not be on HBO Max, but we know it's going to be great, and therefore we'll shop it around. Interesting times, man. I haven't read it yet, but one of the big, like, Hollywood Reporter or Variety or somebody really was talking about how, I mean, Hollywood's in free fall. I mean, things were already bad competing with streaming. COVID, it really seems, obviously pushed things faster and further.
Yeah.
And even now, I mean, as movies are coming out, we'll see how Black Adam does. You know, so, and most of the Marvel movies have done well. You know, I mean, certainly Spider-Man did, but you know, it is interesting. And also again, where are we with these movies? I mean, thankfully DC and Marvel movies are kind of tentpole movies.
Yeah.
But you know, I always say, whatever happened to the medium sized budget, good drama or feel good comedy or buddy movie. And you know, they kind of show up on Netflix and Hulu and Amazon. But, it's interesting.
Well, it's easier to see them at home, especially with COVID. You know, I'll go see some of these bigger movies like Black Adam. I'm going to try and go see it in the theaters. But anything else, you know, we'll wait till it shows up here at home to watch it. And even then, I don't watch stuff because I'm just, you know, working down in the studio. So I'm not, you know, putting this stuff on.
No, I hear you, man. Wesley has a good observation. He says, DC used to be the place for kid monthly comics. I'm glad they're trying to get them where they are with the long form books, but would love to see more Scooby-Doo monthly. Sure. In fact, I was talking to JMD Mateus the other day, and he wrote those Scoopy Apocalypse stories and everything that were recent.
The kids books, you know, they don't do that now for a reason. They don't make any money. It's a loss leader. Even when we were doing Tiny Titans monthly, and we did, you know, we were an outlier. We did 50 something issues of that, and there was no, you know, besides Bugs Bunny or Scooby Doo, nothing else was coming out with that, you know, volume, and we were told that, you know, they weren't making money. Where they wound up making money was when we got enough for a trade, and they were, you know, the first volume of Tiny Titans, you know, hit the New York Times bestseller list. We were floored. We didn't think that was going to happen. I was sitting in an airport when, you know, my phone just starts going crazy. And then Dan DiDio calls me to congratulate me. And I'm like, for what? Am I fired? What happened? He was telling me that it was on the New York Times bestseller list. I'm like, holy cow, really? So, you know, that's where they made their money back and why we were, you know, so many issues, because we were, you hear these things later on afterwards. But, you know, we did 50 issues. And after we did the 50 issues, you hear stories like we were going to get canceled at this issue. And they were thinking of ending it at that issue. And I'm like, really? Really? Because that was like really early on. And you know, then a succession of things happened. We started to win awards and we got on the New York Times bestseller. And those things extended the life. And I'm thankful that it did. But, you know, it was like dead on arrival at a couple of different spots, you know.
Are all the trades actively in print?
No. They did the larger trades, and now what they're doing is they're doing small digest volumes where they're slicing up stories from different issues and putting it out.
Okay.
So I've got a couple of, you know, they just show up in the mail. I don't even know that they're putting them out. But they've only done a few of them so far.
Okay.
You know, the one kind of longing for is for them to take that Billy Batson run and put it in trade format, because they only did the first, I think, 10 or 12 issues in a trade. They did Mike Kunkel's first few issues, and then, you know, the rest of ours that you know, go up to 10 or 12 or whatever. But they never did the back half of the run, which is, you know, the Mike Norton stuff that I love.
Yeah. I mean, that's what this stuff is from. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, no, I hear you, man. And again, and it is odd, given that the Black Adam movie is coming up, and there's a trade right there, man, just waiting to happen.
Yeah.
So that sucks.
Well, I heard from some people that, you know, that they were invited to the premiere of Black Adam, and they asked me if I was going, and I'm like, no, I didn't get invited. They're like, oh, well, I guess, you know, they just invited the writers of that had written Shazam. And I'm like, hello, I'm one of them. So
right there.
Yeah.
No, I hear you, man. And again, the company's changed hands a few times. Maybe Marie wasn't aware of your run. That's very possible.
Oh, that's fine. No, I'm not blaming anyone.
And I realize that too. It's it's an oversight. No, I'm sure it's an innocent oversight. Yeah. Absolutely.
No, but that's one of the books that I really, you know, you always ask the question, what would you want to write again, or would you go back to any of them? That's one with that team, with Art and me writing and Mike on the artwork, is one I would go back to in a heartbeat.
I so agree, man. Do the new Geoff Johns created Marvel family, and the way that you see it in the movies and you see it now in the modern Shazam books, that obviously the Marvel family has expanded and there are more members. Does that intrigue you from a story standpoint?
That's Jeff's run, and I read that, and I like what he did with it. Honestly, I haven't really delved into it that much to know. You know, I saw the movie, but you know, there's lots of fun stuff you could probably do with that. You know, just being busy with other things, I've never really given it a lot of thought, but I'm sure I could do something with it.
I have no idea, you know, especially when it was first announced about the second movie, that Sinbad was going to be Uncle Dudley. I don't know if he still is or not.
Oh, really?
Because it really seems like since they've talked about the new movies and stuff, I hear no mention of Sinbad. And I thought that was an interesting wrinkle and could have been a lot of fun in the movie if it's still part of the plan.
Interesting. What, has Sinbad done anything in the last 15 years or so?
Well, outside of hearing him on comedy podcasts as an interview guest, I don't know. But I do remember the first DC, online video. What were they called? Were they DC Nations? I don't even remember now. You know what I'm talking about. You drew on one of them. You know what I'm talking about?
The DC Nation block or the Fandome? The Fandome.
No, the Fandome. That's what I was thinking of, was the Fandome. They had a big presentation of Shazam, and Sinbad was there, and they're like, oh, he's going to be Uncle Dudley. And it's like, oh, that's cool. And that's a good spin.
So, I didn't know that.
If it was the classic, you would have, like, if while he was still alive, you'd cast Ed Asner to be Uncle Dudley or somebody like that. But no, I'm a sucker for Shazam. I love the history of it. I loved in the early 70s. I was the right age to appreciate when CeCe Beck and Kurt Schaffenberger and Denny O'Neill were doing the 70s Shazam stuff and everything. And I'm sorry, he's still Captain Marvel to me. I mean, I get it. I understand. But it's
Captain Marvel. You think about I love the characters and I love the stories, but you also think about how fascinating how it came to DC, how it was at a different company, and how, you know, and just the mythos behind it, and you know, the Elvis Presley connection to it, and you learn about all that stuff, and you're like this is wild, you know.
Agreed.
If we had stayed longer on the book, I wanted to do something with that Elvis connection. But you know, unfortunately, we were told that it was only going to go to issue 21 or 22, whatever we got to, and we had to wrap things up quick. So we left some storylines hanging in the air, unfortunately, that we just couldn't wrap everything up. But you know, I wanted to get to some of that stuff.
Understood. Well, you know, it's funny. Wayne says that you need more time. And spare time to catch up on stuff. And Brad echoes that and wants more of your Facebook video show, Catching Up with Franco, where Franco draws with some of his favorite artists. And they have like kind of a little BS session while they're sketching stuff. So,
yeah, you know. I really do need more time. Hopefully soon.
Francis, I understand. Hey, seriously. You know, I hope your students appreciate, and I'm not expecting you to answer this. I am saying this. Mm-hmm. I hope they do appreciate, you know, the fact that you're their art teacher, and that's terrific. How many years have you been teaching now, Francis?
This is my 24th year.
Wow.
Teaching. Yeah. I've been teaching for 24 years, and I think I'm burning the candle at both ends a little bit, and I'm starting to feel it. So we'll see how much longer that goes on for, but we'll see.
I understand. Well, again, and also I think of your teachers, and I've always loved when you've told me about Tom Gill in particular, the great Lone Ranger comic book artist that you worked under.
Yeah, that was just a weird get together. I went to a show and I met him and I started talking to him and just kind of got a kinship with him, and then he invited me over to his house to see some artwork and stuff like that. And then I just started, and he taught me how to ink. You know, I ghosted him on a couple of things, inking and stuff like that. You know, the old way we used to do it with the brush and the dipping in the ink rather than digitally the way we do it now. So that was a trip. I mean, the entire time I was sitting there, I'm like, what is happening in my life right now? Like, you know, this guy's worked on everything, you know, he couldn't afford to pay me, but he wound up giving me a couple of pages of artwork from the Lone Ranger as payment. And I didn't want to take them. He's like, no, you take them. And I'm like, what? And I don't know what happened to him.
Oh, that's heartbreaking end to the story. That's too bad. No, man, again, and I get it generationally. I don't know what, I mean, certainly the Armie Hammer, what's-his-face movie didn't help.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's certainly where Armie Hammer is now these days. Table for one. yikes. But that said, no, I mean, again, I grew up on the reruns, and I remember those Tom Gill comic books because Gold Key was still pumping them out and everything. And he was terrific. He was really one of those guys. And like you said, he worked on everything. But
yeah, but you know, he would tell me stories about the way they used to work, where, you know, they would have like all these artists, like, you know, if one guy had a deadline, they would all go over to that guy's house and stay there all weekend to draw and ink a book, and you know, like finish it. And then the next weekend they go to someone else's house to do that. And you know, he had a stable of guys that worked under him, and then they would bring him the pages and he would fix things and say, no, this is the way I would draw it, you know, type thing. And it was just fascinating to hear all that stuff. And he was much older when I met him, but when I was talking to him, he was drawing, you know, when I first met him and it took me, you know, about 10 minutes or so to realize that he was drawing a horse, Lone Ranger and a horse, but he was drawing the horse upside down, right side up, so I could see it. but he was drawing it upside down.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa. I'm like, you know, as I'm talking to him, you know, so I'm like, I don't want to distract him from drawing because I want him to keep drawing. But that's like one of the most amazing things that stands out in my mind about Tom.
That's amazing, man. All right, John, first of all, Artie's watching, which is great.
Oh, yeah, man.
Hey, Artie, you got to come on, and we could do the same thing. You know, obviously, we're talking about Dead Man and the new anthology, but, you know, we're due for a solo conversation as well. And John is doing my job for me. Will you be promoting Dead Man at any shows this year? So, of course, you got New York coming up.
Yeah, New York is coming up next week. And then the weekend after that, we're going to have like a release party at Aya Comics in New York with Sarah Richard and myself. And then 2 weeks later, I'm going to be in Baltimore. But then that's pretty much it for me for the rest of the year until probably maybe C2E2 in, I believe it's in March or April of next year.
Okay, so yeah, well, that's too bad, man. So you're not going to have time, unfortunately, for Skokie for Dead Man?
No, we were supposed to go out actually this week. We had kind of tentatively announced it, but I've had some, you know, personal things that came up that I just wasn't able to swing it. And the only reason I'm able to do New York and Baltimore is because they're not far from where I live, and it's easy to drive home if I need to get home.
Sure. So, no, I hear you, man. Yeah. Oh, this is interesting. Wesley has a last question. Any opinions on pencil level levels increased instead of full inks? I think it works artistically sometimes, but some are taken aback by the look.
Yeah, I'm traditional. I like inks over pencils. I like pencils, but I like inks over pencils for finished work. Just kind of a traditionalist for me. I know that some artists do that raised level on the pencils, but yeah, not for me.
I agree. And you know, really, Wesley, it's not new. I remember when Joe Maduro was doing that on Ultimates Volume 2, the volume that followed Brian Hitch and Mark Miller's run. Yeah. I think it was Loeb and
yeah, I mean, the artwork was fantastic, but it loses a little something, I think, when the full inks aren't there. You don't get those nice, bold, crisp lines. You
know? I totally agree. So John Syke for the launch party at Aya Comics in Harrison. Absolutely.
And then stick around afterwards because we're probably going to have a Halloween party at night. So
hey.
Hey.
Fantastic. Outstanding. Well, everybody, it is Dead Man Tells the Spooky Tales from DC. It's out this week, just in time. Perfect Halloween gift for your kids or your friends' kids. And lots of fun and amazing art and amazing writing from our pal Franco. Well done, dude.
Yeah, man. I appreciate
I'm excited to hear what the next announcement is. And, you know, good luck on the next catching up with Franco. Of course, Franco will be back with me and Mitch and probably Wayne to talk another Trek watch tomorrow. Deep Space Nine on Lower Decks.
Yeah. And also, go pre-order Faye and the Moon, which comes out in February. It's my new graphic novel that comes out in February.
And is that you and Sarah again?
No, that's two artists by the name of Sarah and Catherine Satran. They did the artwork for Faye and the Moon, so I'm really excited. It's fully creator-owned and comes out from Little Bee Books in February.
Outstanding. Yeah, I'm sorry, Francis. I meant to mention, of course, you are. You're doing these great first readers. And Dino Mike is a great series that you've done in the past.
Yeah, Capstone. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was that other one? Is that through Capstone?
That was through Capstone. It was a Dino Mike series, and there's eight of those altogether. You can still order them. I think they're available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and stuff like that.
Excellent. There you go. Well done, and thank you, everybody, for watching. I hope you enjoyed it. I think I'm off tomorrow. I think I'm going to take the rest of the weekend off, but you know, great stuff coming up in October. I'm very happy with the people that we got lined up. So lots more, you know, and I'm going to do my best to make sure I get programming, even though New York Comic Con is coming up. So thanks for watching. Everybody stay safe, stay happy, stay healthy.